Welcome to The Point. I'm Mindy Todd. Today we find out where the candidates running for state representative in the 1st Barnstable District stand on the issues. The district includes the town of Dennis, parts of Barnstable, parts of Brewster, and parts of Yarmouth. The candidates are Republican Timothy Whalen. Good morning, Tim. We have Tim. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, okay. Hi.
I dropped the mute button again. I'm sorry.
That's okay. And we have Democrat Joshua Mason. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Mindy.
Reminder, our format, up to 2 minutes to answer questions, and then we will have 2 minutes for closing comments at the end. And Josh Mason, let's start with you. Why do you want to represent the 1st Barnstable District, and what skills do you bring to the table?
Well, good morning, Mindy, and good morning, Rep. Whalen. It's good to be with both of you, and I'm really happy to be here to have this discussion this morning. Well, I'm Josh Mason. I grew up on Cape Cod. I graduated from Dennis Yarmouth High School. I'm a bartender, I'm a son, I'm a brother, and an active member of our community that's concerned about our future. What I've been struck by is the frustration of our residents, not being able to put food on the table for their families, unaffordable, unattainable housing for our citizens, the frustration of a four-month-a-year economy, and that leaves our teachers and our fishermen struggling to meet the basic resources and accommodations all year long that most consider a right. I've spoken to people across the district that are suffering, and I share their pain and frustration because I, too, am one of them, especially underneath the current COVID pandemic and the economic situations. People are worried, and not only with the lack of year-round employment and incomes on Cape Cod being 30% less than off-Cape, healthcare being marginalized, and local businesses, business closures, but Cape Cod has succumbed to a form of the Gilded Age that has prioritized high-value seasonal residents and over 250,000 of year-round residents of Cape Cod that reside here have sort of been, overlooked, if you will. But what I bring to the table is I bring an experience as someone who's been in the community, someone who's lived here. I've grown up here. I went to the school system. I serve as Democratic Town Committee Chair in Dennis. I serve on the planning board. I serve in the Affordable Housing Trust. I've done work with my local police department with their crisis intervention task force. And I truly believe that some of the plans and some of my platform that I have that I can lay out here today are going to be very beneficial to move the community forward in the direction that I feel is going to serve the people of our communities.
Thank you. And Tim Whalen, same question, I guess, for you. Why do you want to continue to represent the 1st Barnstable District?
Mindy, thank you very much for having Josh and I on your program today, and I would be remiss if I didn't take a moment right up front to wish my friend Josh a very, very happy birthday. Today's a big day, and Josh, I hope that you have a fantastic day.
Thank you, Tim.
You're very welcome, my friend. You're very, very welcome. Mindy, it's been the honor of a lifetime to serve. I've led a lifetime of service from the time I was 19 years old and I started working at the Worcester County Sheriff's Department. My service in the United States Marine Corps. I'm an honorably discharged United States Marine. And then my continuing service of 21 years with the Massachusetts State Police, and now wrapping up my 6th year serving in the House of Representatives. Public service is something that was really instilled in me at a young age by my father, who was a school teacher, an elementary school teacher, and my mom, who was a nurse. Public service is in my blood. And this this role that I've been filling, that I've been blessed to fill on behalf of my constituents in the 1st Barnstable District has really been, it's just been quite a trip, and we've accomplished an awful lot. And I have to tell you, Mindy, the amount of accomplishments that we have, and we're going to be coming out with those in advertisements and mailings over the coming weeks just to recap what we've been able to do with all the residents that I serve, it's pretty lengthy. And what I'm asking is, I'm asking the voters of the 1st Barnstable District to please, please consider voting me for me again when you go to the polls on November 3rd, so that I can continue my service, I can continue supporting our public education, I can continue supporting affordable housing, I can continue to support our public safety professionals, our municipalities, I can continue my close work with our municipal officials, because everything comes down to how we operate at the local level here on Cape Cod. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Tim Whalen, we're going to start with you this time. What are your thoughts on the police reform bill ongoing at the State House now?
Sure, that's a great question, Mindy, and I'm glad that you asked that. So I've been involved with this discussion since it first came up shortly after the horrible murder of George Floyd. It was shocking to all of us. Now, a dear friend of mine is Representative Carlos Gonzalez of Springfield. He came into the State House with me. He's my classmate, and he's one of my closest friends. Carlos serves as the chair of the Black and Latino Legislative Caucus. Carlos reached out to myself and my other dear friend, Representative Paul Tucker of Salem. They're both Democrats. And the three of us put together a series of meetings so that the Black and Latino Legislative Caucus could meet with, there's an organization called the Massachusetts Law Enforcement Policy Group that includes police unions and police management, police chiefs. And what we had was I put together three meetings with the group, and we had some formative discussion. And what came out of it was that the caucus had what they called the eight can't wait list of priorities. And these were things such as diversification of the workforce. These were things such as a post system for the certification, decertification of police officers. These were enhanced training protocols and enhanced use of force guidelines and reporting. And we were all very much in agreement on this. And then what happened was in early July, the wheels kind of fell off the bus, and the Senate at that point took the bill and included all sorts of aspects that were not really part of the discussions that we had. It kind of caught all of us in the House, and all of us, it caught the Black and Latino Legislative Caucus off guard too. So here we are, we're left with an extensive discussion going forward, trying to put together differences between the House bill and the Senate version of the bill. There are six members of the legislature that are assigned to do it. I'm one of the six. We have a lot of work that we have done. We have a lot of work ahead, and we're in part three, act three of a five-part play. So please stay tuned. Mm-hmm.
All right. Thank you. Same question, Josh Mason, to you.
So in respect to police reform, first and foremost, I want to thank Kim Whalen for his service as a police officer, his former career. But in addition to that, police reform is one of those things that, you know, obviously is very topical. It's very present in the news due to some of the unfortunate, heinous instances and just absolutely abhorrent, unnecessary deaths of certain individuals across the country, in the African-American community more specifically. So I think this is a great time. We're sort of at a crossroads here, but we are at a place where we need to make a change. We know that a lot of this unnecessary behavior only deals with a minority of our law enforcement officials. The majority of our law enforcement officials do it by the book. They do an exceptional job. They put their lives on the line, and we have the utmost respect for the job they do, and they put on that uniform and go out there. But there are a certain small number of officers that don't do it by the book and ruin it for everyone. So we need to look at changing the culture and the tactical, deployment of how we approach law enforcement. We need to focus on more social services and de-escalation. Unfortunately, my opponent has voted no to support the package in the House. He opposed the qualified immunity mandate and also with respect to banning tear gas. He voted against that as well. So we do break on those areas, and I hope to have more of a discussion about some of those instances as well.
Thank you. Josh Mason, we start with you this time. How will you work to keep a balanced budget that doesn't cut local aid and school funding in the uneven economy we have in this COVID-19 pandemic?
So with respect to the economy, that's a real challenge. Obviously, right now, underneath the pandemic, the state is just swimming in red ink as it stands. We are sort of below the line. Our rainy day fund is running low, and unemployment is up. We have one of the highest unemployment rates in the country out of any state, also due to the type of jobs that we have. And I feel like it's only going to get worse as we move into the fall, with restaurants having to move indoors and safety measures not being able to be accommodating to, the type of dining and the comfortability of the patrons. So with that said, it's a real challenge, I think, from a state level right now, being that we're already in the red and we're really reliant upon the feds to kind of kick in and to give us an infusion. And I know that goes for every state across the country. We're all sort of in the same boat. I am focused, a lot on the local economy with respect to implementing programs that work for Cape Codders, something that we don't have to do by going to the legislature up on Beacon Hill and begging for money up there and begging for handouts necessarily, but implementing programs through our education system, through our healthcare system. Those are all part of my platform, and I would love to expand on those and have a little bit more of a discussion with those if we have some more time.
All right, thank you. Tim Whalen, same question.
Sure. Thank you, Mindy. Great question, because this is probably one of the biggest questions of the day right now is how are we going to manage our budget? How are we going to pay our bills when we are suffering from the economic downfall of the current worldwide pandemic? So I'm the only legislator from the Cape and Islands legislative delegation who serves on the House and the Joint Committees on Ways and Means. My committee, we write the budget, and being on this committee has been a really good thing for the Cape, because I've been able to use some of my influence and friendships to try and direct more money down here to the Cape for projects, not only in my district, but also Cape-wide and over on the islands as well. We were originally projected by Chairman Mike Lewitz from Ways and Means that we were going to be looking at up to a $6 billion projected revenue loss. And the balance that we had with that, Mindy, was that our rainy day fund, and we had the largest per capita rainy day fund in the country, before the pandemic hit, our rainy day fund covered $3 billion of that, because that's all that we had. The way that we've managed our way through this is just waiting to see how the revenue numbers keep coming in. The Department of Revenue reports are on the middle of the month every month with the monthly collections. We built out in July a 1/12 budget to get us through the month of July. And then what we did was we also enacted and signed into law a 3-month budget that's set to expire on October 31st. Where we are right now, we've been seeing really, really good numbers coming in. We've actually seen numbers coming in for tax revenues that are above what we expected we were going to get and what we collected last year at the same time. But a lot of this really is hinging on what's going to come out of Washington, what sort of pandemic relief, further pandemic relief we're going to be seeing coming out of Washington. And right now, I don't think with all the maelstrom that we see going on down there in the D.C. Beltway, I don't think anybody has a crystal ball that can predict for you exactly how this is all going to play out.
All right. Thank you. We are talking with the candidates running for state representative in the 1st Barnstable District, Tim Whalen and Josh Mason. If you have a question that you'd like to pose to both candidates, 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll have more after a break. You're listening to The Point. We are talking with the candidates running for state representative in the 1st Barnstable District, Tim Whalen and Josh Mason. 866-999-4626 is our number. If you have a question for the candidates, we ask you pose the same question to both candidates. 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. And Gregory is giving us a call from Dennis. Hi, Gregory.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What's your question?
My question is simple. I think I know local issues are always relevant, but actually, it seems to me in the last few years, we actually have an easy shorthand to kind of understand where a candidate is coming from in terms of their kind of politics and judgment. And I just want to know what presidential candidate each candidate is supporting. And obviously, I think that'll tell us a lot about where these people are coming from in terms of our local issues as well.
All right. Gregory, thanks for the question. Tim Whalen, we start with you.
Well, my hat's off to Josh, because I know that this was going to be a cornerstone of his campaign, was going to be the presidential election. And, were I in your shoes, Josh, I would probably be using the same tool. So where I am right now in the presidential election is, I can guarantee you, I am not going to be voting for Vice President Biden. I am really concerned with some of the behaviors that I see coming out of the White House. I'm really concerned with a lot of the behaviors that I see coming out of all levels of government. I mean, for any one particular party to try and claim the moral high ground with the absolute horror show that we're seeing down in D.C., I just don't see that that being the case. I think that there's plenty of blame to go around, particularly with what we see going on right now with the trying to fill Justice Bader Ginsburg's seat and all the discussion over that. So where I am and who I'm going to vote right now, I don't know. I'm extremely disturbed by the treatment that I saw James Mattis receive on his way out the door. James Mattis is a personal hero to me. John Kelly, a personal hero to me, being a United States Marine. So right now, I don't know. Maybe I vote for President Trump. Maybe I write in James Mattis, or maybe I write in John Kelly. I really just don't know. We still have several weeks to watch everything play out, and I'm not committed really in any direction at this time.
Thank you. Josh Mason, same question.
Sure. I mean, this is pretty black and white for me. I'm going to be voting for Joe Biden. It has nothing to do with just being a Democrat. It has everything to do with integrity. And to Mr. Whalen's point, I mean, it should be a pretty easy question, a pretty easy answer. Joe Biden. I mean, you want to talk about a horror show? You want to talk about inappropriate and abhorrent behavior? That's coming out of the Trump White House, the Trump administration, and we become the divided states of America under this presidency. And I have to tell you, we need someone in there with some more experience, with empathy, somebody who actually cares about what's going on with respect to the matters of people on a more emotional level, too. Somebody who's concerned about the as he says, the soul of the country. I think we need to get back down to the founding principles of this country. Resetting our moral high ground, our moral compass. And I think Joe Biden is very representative of that, as is his running mate, Kamala Harris. And I think that a Biden-Harris administration is the panacea that this country needs to set the course straight and put us back on track, and bring America back in a big way.
All right. Thank you, Josh. We may start with you this time, Josh Mason. Cape Cod Commission is looking at how it might expand the 2018 regional policy plan to reduce carbon emissions and mitigate climate change rather than just adapt to it. How would you like to see the Cape take a step forward in reducing the carbon emissions produced here?
So on the Cape, obviously, the environment is a huge, huge issue. I'm in support of a Green New Deal. I'm in support of, moving towards 100% renewable energy. I know that my opponent, does not support moving towards 100% renewable energy. He was not a co-sponsor on Bill H-2836 to achieve that. I do support that. And I will say that, we're looking to invest as we move forward and sort of redevelop technologies and things within our communities. How we move forward with healthcare, how we move forward with education, implementing more charge stations for electric vehicles, cutting down the amount of traffic on the roads by widening, sidewalk areas for more cyclists, implementing more rideshare programs to cut down the carbon footprint. Another thing I'd like to do is put a 5-year moratorium on shoreline development, so that we give our shorelines and the ability and the opportunity to rehabilitate and for regrowth to preserve our beaches. And also, instead of inspiring new construction, we need to look at redevelopment in areas where we have vacancies, old hotels, old homes, people who are overhoused. So we can still develop without overdeveloping, and we can keep that down to a net zero. Yeah.
All right. Tim Whalen, same question.
I'd just like to point out the start that my opponent clearly doesn't understand my position on climate change and carbon reduction based upon his comments and misrepresenting my role on this and my positions. I voted most recently to support the 2050 roadmap bill that was filed by my dear friend, Representative Joan Moschino from Hull. Much like the Cape, Hull has been ravaged by the effects of climate change and ocean sea level rise. So I was a yes vote on that, and I took some heat within my own party for it. So there are times that you're going to dig in, and you're going to do what's right. But what I will not take is I will not take my position being misrepresented. I've fought hard with our communities, and again, it's all about working locally with our communities. When I first came into office in 2015 and I discovered the value of the Commonwealth Green Communities Initiative, I started working with our local towns. At that point, We didn't have any of the four towns in the first Barnstable district that were Commonwealth Green Communities. A Commonwealth Green Community means that they've committed to reducing carbon emissions, whether it be through using vehicles that are more fuel efficient, whether it be through lighting, other means to basically just reduce fuel use. So what's happened in the past year and a half is both Brewster and Yarmouth, through the hard work that I've been doing with my office, Brewster and Yarmouth are now green communities, and both communities received over $100,000 grant from the Commonwealth to help help advance the ball down down the field and reduce carbon emissions here on the Cape. I've seen the effects of climate change right here on the Cape firsthand. We saw it up in Barnstable Village, with the Blish Point neighborhood that went underwater, large portions of it, during the winter storms that we had a few years ago. I voted in favor of lifting the net metering caps for solar. I've also brought in several $100,000 in coastal resilience grants to Dennis and also into Yarmouth, where they used some of the money for the Parkes River Bridge. We've just got $1 million for riverfront improvement and also to improve the tidal flow. So there's a lot of work that we've done, and I'm very proud of it.
Thank you. All right. John writes, regulating short-term rentals such as Airbnb has become an issue in the Mid-Cape, with these rentals causing some problems in neighborhoods. How do they propose we regulate these rentals? And Tim, we start with you this time.
Sure. The regulation of the rentals is done at the municipal level. That's not anything that, that's done at the state level. So what I would recommend to the gentleman submitting that question would be that he works with local officials in particular as it relates to that, because again, the short-term rentals and that's managed at the municipal level.
Okay, Josh, you want to add anything to that?
No, just that, you know, I think that with respect to the Airbnb, that, you know, it does need to be managed through a registry. I know that, you know, through our municipalities and things, it is somewhat managed. I think that, you know, beyond that, we need to look at additional taxations on investment properties. And I think that we need to be, you know, more vigilant watchdogs of certain properties that are not being used throughout the year. You know, people who have their lights on literally 2 weeks out of the year, who have properties here along shorelines and more affluent neighborhoods and things. You know, I think that, you know, with respect to that,
let me ask you another question, and Josh, we'll start with you this time. There's been some talk about a tax surcharge to create a housing fund for working families. Is that something you would support?
Yeah.
Do you want to expand upon that, or just say yes?
I'm sorry. Can you repeat that one more time? I apologize.
Yeah, I said there's been some talk of a tax surcharge to create a housing fund for working families.
Yes, I do support that. Yes. I do support that because right now, as it stands, you know, we're in a really terrible situation here in the Cape with respect to affordable housing and affordability. I don't think we have enough opportunities available to families here. You know, something that I've looked to do is to repeal the Rent Control Zoning Act of 1994 to help to expand different zoning rules and zoning bylaws on the Cape. And also, you know, looking to expand our accessory dwelling bylaw opportunities as well throughout the towns is something that I've been working fervently here in the town of Dennis on. You know, it's important that if we're going to keep young people here, and we're going to try to attract young people to come to the Cape and to live here and to raise families, that we give them the affordable opportunities. And I think that if there are people who are above a certain threshold with respect to income levels, that they could pay just a little bit more into programs that will help to give the middle class families opportunities to live here and to work on the Cape as well, so they aren't being pushed out.
Thank you. Tim Whalen, same question.
I would be opposed to that unequivocally. There are several proposals floating around out there, anywhere from taxing any real estate transfer all the way up to, I believe that there was one filed over on Nantucket that would only tax $1 million-plus properties. So I would be opposed to it because right now Barnstable County already has the highest real estate transfer taxes in the entire Commonwealth. If you want to start talking about home affordability, trying to make first-time home ownership a possibility for young families, it starts right there. And we can say, and it's true, that the transfer taxes, you know, are being paid by the seller rather than the buyer. Well, it's just like anything else. It's a pass-through. It gets passed on to the buyer. And I want to do whatever we can within reason to try and make homes affordable for young families so we can keep them here on Cape Cod. And the idea of taxing people out of the ability to afford those first homes, to me, runs counter to that mission.
Thank you. Tim Whalen, we start with you this time. During this coronavirus pandemic, the opioid epidemic continues. We're making progress, but certainly the pandemic has created some challenges. So your thoughts on where we're at and what next steps need to happen with the opioid epidemic?
Sure. I think that we're seeing underreporting of incidences of overdose. Where I see a lot of the problems right now, for the poor souls who are lost in the web of addiction in the time of coronavirus has been that the courts were closed. And also there was a limit on human services. You look at some of the human service offices in Hyannis. You look at some of the human service offices across the Commonwealth. Staff there are working remotely. And working remotely rather than having direct one-on-one interaction with some of these people who desperately need help, and their families need the help as much as the addict does, that's been severely affected. When it comes to the courts, the ability of families to access the court system, families and loved ones to access the court system, and be able to use Section 35 to get their loved ones put into involuntary treatment. And again, this is something that's critical for people who are very, very deep down in the well of addiction. For several months, that ability was severely impacted while the courts were working remotely. We saw that the number of Section 35 coming into the treatment centers across the Commonwealth dipped markedly, and that the counts went down by, I believe it was somewhere greater than 80%. So as we're bouncing back from this, one of the fights that I've had right from the start, right out of the gate, has been tackling this addiction crisis. And we're working right now. We're going 100 miles an hour trying to make sure that we're catching up to speed, and we're making sure that nobody gets lost that we could otherwise get to and try and save.
Thank you. Josh Mason, same question.
Yeah, so with respect to the opioid crisis, this is something that's extremely personal to me, as I had somebody in my life that I took care of for many years who had an addiction issue. So this hits me pretty hard. I do have to say that I held this person's hand through the process, and the way the system is currently set up is it's very broken. It isn't set up in a way that it leads to success for the addict. I think we need to go much further. Boston is supposedly the medical capital of the world. And I got to tell you, for rehabilitation, for the resources to addicts, it's just not there. And I got to tell you, I'm very surprised. So if Boston doesn't necessarily have their ducks in a row, it's damn near impossible to say that Cape Cod does. And it's certainly not our fault for lack of trying. Our healthcare services, Duffy, Gosnold, our clinicians, they work so hard, they work tirelessly to try to ameliorate the situation and to help the people in need. But unfortunately, the resources just aren't there yet. The facilities aren't there yet. And we need to do them a service. And especially when we have an economy that doesn't serve all the people of Cape Cod, we have addiction rates, we have depression, we have mental health issues that are on the rise come fall, and it lasts all the way through the summer. So we need to worry about how do we foundationally fix our economy, and then we give the communities the resources and the personnel to cope with the situation.
All right, thank you. We are talking with the candidates running for state representative in the 1st Barnstable District. They are Timothy Whalen and Josh Mason. 866-999-4626 is our number. If you have a question for the candidates, 866-999-4626. Or you can shoot us an email, thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll have more after break. You're listening to The Point. We are talking with the candidates running for state representative in the 1st Barnstable District, Timothy Whalen and Josh Mason. 866-999-4626 is our number if you have a question for the candidates, or you can send us an email, thepoint@capeandislands.org. And Josh Mason, we start with you this time. Peter in Yarmouth writes, would either of you work for and support a 25-cent deposit on nip bottles? It seems to me that a mere 5-cent deposit is not enough to change users' behavior. What are your thoughts, Josh?
Yeah, you know, I think this is a very cyclical issue. This is something that's been going on for some time. We've been talking about within our jurisdictions here in our townships for some period, you know, whether or not to completely abolish nip bottles or do we tax them. Well, I think it's sort of twofold. I agree. I think we should increase taxation on the nip bottles. I think that's an incentive to at least hopefully keep them off the streets. But I think in the bigger picture is we need to move toward completely doing away with nip bottles altogether. I just, you know, that's one of the worst offenders as far as our environment goes, is when we're doing street cleanups with the towns, or even if we're out for walks, you know, our beautiful streets are littered with these nip bottles. I would absolutely support that. And then, like I said, in the bigger picture, move to completely abolish nip bottles altogether.
All right. Tim Whalen.
I wouldn't support a 25-cent tax or a 25-cent return fee on the bottles. I'm a co-sponsor of Randy Hunt's bill that adds the same 5-cent return fee as applies to any other beverage container that's already currently regulated. When you look at nips are running anywhere from 79 cents to like $1.49 on average. There are some more expensive, some god-awful stuff that's less expensive than that. The idea of adding anywhere from a 25 to a 40% increase on the over-the-counter cost of a beverage, to me, is not—it's just not doable. I believe that the 5-cent rule should apply, and I will continue to work with Randy Hunt to see if we can get that applied, because I share the same concerns that Josh brought up. I'm not blind. I walk around and I see, and I usually carry a plastic bag with me, and I'll pick up the trash as I'm walking around, and I picked up my share of nip bottles too, and it's unnecessary that they be scattered all about.
All right, thank you. Tim Whalen, we start with you this time. How do you see your role as stewards or advocates now that the state will be taking control of the bridges?
You know, that's so far down the road right now, Mindy, when the state will take control of the bridges. Because we're looking at a timeline. I believe it's going to be 10 or 12 years before the bridges are going to be open. This is a tried and true process that we're going through here, whereby the federal government, the Army Corps of Engineers, is going to build these new bridges and turn them over to the state. I think just for management purposes, that's going to be a very, very good thing, because it's kind of difficult. Having been on the state police all those years, and I worked out of the Bourne Barracks, I supervised and managed out of the Bourne Barracks, it would be difficult sometimes to know exactly where the state government road ended and exactly where the line was. If the federal government road began, then you go over the bridge and then you have to find the line again. You know, just to have continuity and enforcement, continuity and maintenance, the state taking it over is a very, very good thing. The fact that the federal government right now is in the process of trying to allocate and budget the money so that we're going to get premier bridges, which are going to really help with our transportation infrastructure here on the Cape. It's all a good thing, but Mindy, right now it's way too early to tell how we as state legislators can serve as stewards, because again, we're at least 10 or 12 years away from the ribbon cutting on it.
All right, Josh Mason, same question.
Sure. Well, flash forward a little bit. These bridges are really going to come into play and help us out, I think, economically down the road. Certainly part of my plan is to implement something I like to call a Cape Cod Community Fund, which adds taxation to certain investment properties, across the community, and adds a $3 bridge toll to the bridges with an exemption for residents and for workers. So those who get hit by the toll are only going to be visitors. What that's going to do is generate an additional revenue of anywhere between $15 and $25 million between Memorial Day and Labor Day alone, with the volume of traffic going over those bridges. And we certainly have the camera toll technology to do that without impeding upon the flow of traffic that's already, you know, become a gridlock over the summer months. And also, the other thing, too, to keep in mind is that third bridge. You know, we need to install a medium-speed electric rail that's, you know, got no carbon footprint to it, that runs all the way from South Station down towards Provincetown. That's going to help to, you know, bring down the volume of traffic on our roads as well. So I think that if we can move in areas that are going to be more environmentally savvy, that are going to actually give us a means of public transportation that we don't have, this is a really a great thing, the acquisition of these bridges. My hope is that the Cape can also take control, so we can certainly reap the benefits of this from a revenue standpoint and also a public transportation standpoint for our citizens here on the Cape.
All right, thank you. Josh Mission, we start with you this time. Let's talk about infrastructure. What do you see as the most critical need, and what is your plan to address it?
Wow. Well, there's so many critical needs. I mean, it's amazing to me that next to New Jersey, we are the number two state in the country that spends the most on road work and road construction, yet we don't really have too much to show for it. Our roads are imperfect. Certainly here in the Cape, no one ever expected Cape Cod to become what it is, a full-time, environment for, 250,000 people. So we've certainly outgrown what I think the Cape was initially meant to be, and that was sort of a bit of a visitor's enclave. But it's turned into a beautiful place. With that, we need to be a little bit more ahead of the curve with respect to infrastructure and transformation. If we're going to bring in more economic opportunity, if we're going to be able to expand our healthcare programs and our educational programs, we need to look at, the internet transmission issue. Clearly, broadband and fiber has been a hot topic. I know, Open Cape has done a lot of good work. We need to deal with the Comcast monopoly. We need to bring more options in. We need to look at 5G technology. We need to look into installing a train. We need to look at how we, as opposed to putting, meaningless studies into wastewater, while that's an important issue, we need to look at traffic studies, our flow of traffic. How can we make our cars and our roads flow a little bit better? Undergrounding our power lines so that we don't have to deal with the storms, compromising our power during the winter months, especially for older people. So we've got a whole bevy of issues here, a whole bastion of issues that we can sit here and discuss. And I've just touched upon them, and I've got plans to deal with each one of those items.
All right, thank you. Tim Whelan, same question.
Sure. Hands down, absolutely without question, is wastewater. Wastewater is the number one issue that's holding us back. When you talk about the development of affordable housing, when you talk about trying to recruit year-round employers to come down here to the Cape, they do not want to have to come down and incur the added expense of having an on-site septic system and the headaches that go along with that. I use as an example, talking to friends of mine who own businesses in Yarmouth and Venice, and I'll commonly talk to them, and they'll say, geez, I just had to spend $35,000 and pour it into the ground because of septic issues at my restaurant. I hear that over and over and over again. When you look at, I believe it was somewhere in the area of $800,000 or $1 million that was spent for the septic system for the Yarmouth Commons project, just for the septic and Yarmouth Commons project in Yarmouth, quite obviously, that's just a further testament to the fact that we need to build out a wastewater infrastructure here on the Cape. And I'm very proud of the work that I've done working with the DHY, the Dennis Howitch and Yarmouth Clean Waters Collaborative, that Clean Waters Partnership. We've been meeting with them, me and my staff have been meeting with them for over 2 years. And just this past several months ago, we filed a bill and it was signed into law by the governor, which allows the creation of the Dennis Howitch Yarmouth Clean Waters Community Partnership. And now what happens is that's going to go before the voters in the towns of Dennis Howitch and Yarmouth to allow for an intermunicipal wastewater collaborative, which is going to be much more effective and much cheaper. It's going to save the taxpayer, the ratepayer, a ton of money. So wastewater is number one, and transportation is right behind that. As we discussed the bridges over the canal earlier, the Route 28 Bass River Bridge is going to be getting replaced over the next couple of years, as well as the Route 6 bridge over Bass River, and also the high-speed fiber and wireless. That is going to be the way of the future for our year-round economy.
All right. Tim Whalen, we start with you this time. You know, we generally in these debates ask about small business and what we can do to support small business. And we, with the pandemic, we have small businesses really hurting right now. So what are your thoughts at helping small business get through this difficult time?
Sure. No, that's a great question, and I appreciate that. It actually, the timing on that's excellent, too, because I announced today, Mindy, that my campaign for reelection has been endorsed by the National Federation of Independent Businesses. And the National NFIB is the nation's leading small business association, and they have offices in all 50 states. In the endorsement, their director, Chris Calazzi, stated, and I quote, "We thank you for your commitment to the needs of thousands of Main Street small businesses and their more than 1 million employees in Massachusetts during your service on Beacon Hill." So where I think this begins, Mindy, is it begins with patronizing our small businesses, talking to the owners, going in and not just buying what you need and getting out, but talking to the owner. I go into Ring Brothers, for instance, in Dennis, and I talk with Ed Ring as an example. He's just one example of many of the businesses. Go in and talk to him, find out where his needs are, where the state is holding him back from his business growth, where he thinks the state can improve, what he thinks we can do. Some of the things that he offers we can do, some of the things we can't. But it begins with listening, and it begins with trying to view things from their perspective. Our small business people here on the Cape, and let's face it, small business drives our economy here on the Cape. Without them, we're in trouble. Our small business people very often feel like they're being disrespected by some of the impositions that state government puts, the mandates that state government and federal government puts on them. Some of them are reasonable. Some of them we have to look at just trying to make life easier for them so they can grow and they can hire more of our friends and neighbors. And, again, many of these are year-round jobs. So, again, I'm just going to continue to work on their behalf, continue to listen, and I'm very grateful to have their support in my reelection campaign.
Thank you. Josh Mason, same question.
Sure. Well, I'm someone who comes from the small business sector, so, you know, I have an understanding of this being in it. And the fact that, you know, I got to tell you, like, up until about 2 years ago, I'm a bartender. So year-round opportunities necessarily aren't there for all of us because there's only so much to go around due to the fact that we have only a four-month-a-year economy here. So I think, again, this begs the question of, let's create a year-round economy here, and how do we do that? It hasn't been done yet. And I'm proposing that we turn Cape Cod Community College into a universal university, partnering up with a college over the bridge to do that, to expand our partnership with Brigham and Women's Hospital and to make Cape Cod Hospital a teaching hospital, to implement that Cape Cod Community Fund that I touched upon before, because we can take some of those some of that revenue. And what we can do is I've got a plan in place for small businesses that come to the Cape. We're encouraging young families to come here. We're encouraging young families to stay here. And what we're going to do is we're going to take some of that money. We're going to reappropriate it into paying off small business loans if they've made good on their loans for a three-year period. So what that does is that inspires confidence in small businesses for them to reinvest that money, either expanding their business or using it to increase the volume of their business while promoting it. Obviously, we always promote shop local, buy local here on Cape Cod. It's extremely important. But we need to figure out how do we keep the economy open throughout the winter so we don't have to shutter our doors. Because right now, 49% of the jobs in Cape Cod only serve tourists and vacationers. And then what happens in October? Well, unemployment goes up again. Depression goes up again. Substance use goes up again. So, you know, there's a pattern here. You can connect all the dots. I've just done it for you. So with that said, it's pressing that we create a year-round economy. And again, I have a plan through healthcare, through education, and piping in small businesses in our local economy to do that. And I will do that as the next state representative.
All right. Thank you. And we don't have time for another question, but I'm going to let you have 2.5 minutes, if you'd like, for your closing comments. And Josh Mason, we start with you.
Of course. So I want to thank you, Mindy. I want to thank WCAI. I want to thank you, Representative Whalen, for a spirited discussion today. And I want to thank all the listeners who tuned in today. I want to reemphasize that, you know, we are on the clock here at Cape Cod, and time is running out. I feel like this is our opportunity to make a real difference, to build an economy that works for all Cape Codders year-round, that gives our public education system and our teachers the funds and resources to be successful, that ensures all Cape Codders have a roof over their head, that our children are fed, that our hospitals are offering all of the same services that are available in Boston. We will make sure those who live here part-time understand that they have to participate full-time and that we're going to take care of our own people. We are putting Cape Cod first and foremost. And while I agree with my opponent that supporting and ensuring our law enforcement communities has the support and resources to safely do their jobs, my opponent, over his three terms, has chosen primarily to prioritize this one area of our community. And I'm asking you, if you elect me as your next state representative, I promise to prioritize the entire community. I ask for your vote on November 3rd, and thank you all for your time today.
Thank you. Tim Whelan.
I want to thank you, Mindy, for hosting Josh and me this morning. Thank you to your audience for their interest in our race and for paying attention to the issues. And thank you, Josh, and I mean this sincerely, for taking up the challenge of running for public office. It takes guts to put your name out there in public, especially in today's political climate, which is not so nice. And lastly, thank you to my constituents in the First Constable District, who I've been honored to serve on Beacon Hill these past 6 years. When we embarked on this journey together in 2014, I was an unknown, and I introduced myself to you as someone with a strong work ethic, a solid moral compass, and someone with virtually limitless energy for public service. I hope that you judge that I've lived up to the way I represented myself to you then, and that you judge me worthy of your support for another term in this upcoming election. Just in these past few years, we've faced crises for which there's no playbook sitting on a shelf that we can rely on for guidance. Strong and experienced leadership have been critical in rising to these serious challenges. Together, our community has faced a horrifying opioid and addiction epidemic, a crippling series of winter storms, the painful on-duty loss of one of our region's finest policemen, tornadoes ripping through the heart of the First Barnstable District, and now we find ourselves right in the midst of a global pandemic in the heart of the Cape's busiest season. We continue to move forward on these issues as well as our work toward fixing our district's wastewater concerns, improving state funding for local public schools, fixing our roadways, and dredging our waterways. We've accomplished so much together in what I think we can all agree have been some of the most difficult times in recent memory. I was ready for the challenges then, and I remain eager to serve you for another term on Beacon Hill. My name is Tim Whelan, and I humbly ask for your vote in the upcoming election. Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you, Tim Whelan and Josh Mason. Thank you both for being with us and letting listeners know where you stand on issues. And if you missed any part of this morning's conversation, you can find it on our website, capeandislands.org. We also have a list of other upcoming debates. Again, thank you both for being with us.
Thank you, Mindy.
Mindy.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thank you for listening.